Nice glasses.
Oh, thanks.
I have 20/20 vision. I don't really need glasses.
Oh. Well, I used to have perfect vision until I caught an eye disease while on the mission field. So, glasses, totally worth it.
Where did you do mission work?
I spent an entire week in Africa.
Well, I was in Africa for an entire year. It's amazing how much you get to know Jesus when you're there for that long. Where were you in Africa? I rescue orphans from there all the time.
Really? I wonder if you rescue them from the orphanages that I built there.
I don't think so.
Oh, you wouldn't probably know that they're mine. I don't have my name on the building or anything. I prefer to remain anonymous.
Oh, well, I prefer to remain anonymous too, but when you do so much for Jesus like I do, you just can't help but be known. Listen, I have built so many hospitals and churches because I care about the body and the soul.
That's nice, but I don't need a church to save souls. I just preach from the side of the mountain, like Jesus.
Well, if you would come down off of that mountain, you would know what people really need, like I do.
Well, please, like you know what people need. Me and Jesus, we're tight.
Look, you guys wouldn't even know Jesus if he came up to you with a sign that said, I'm Jesus.
Are you kidding? I've brought more people to Jesus than Jesus.
Well, he wouldn't even have a ministry if it wasn't for me. Jesus. What are you doing?
Do you love me? Do you really love me? Then follow me.
Matthew chapter 4, verse 19. Come, follow me, Jesus said, and I will send you out to fish for people. Matthew chapter 8, verse 22. But Jesus told him, follow me and let the dead bury their own dead. Matthew chapter 9, verse 9. And Jesus went on from there, and he saw a man named Matthew sitting at the tax collector's booth. Follow me, he told him. And Matthew got up and followed him. Matthew chapter 10, verse 38, whoever does not take up their cross and follow me is not worthy of me. Matthew chapter 16, verse 24, then Jesus said to his disciples, whoever wants to be my disciple must deny themselves, take up their cross, and follow me. Matthew chapter 19, verse 21, Jesus answered, if you want to be perfect, go and sell your possessions, give to the poor, and you will have treasure in heaven. Then come, follow me. Matthew chapter 19, verse 28. Jesus said to them, truly I tell you, at the renewal of all things, when the Son of Man sits in his glorious throne, you who have followed me will also sit on 12 thrones, judging the 12 tribes of Israel. John chapter 1, verse 43. Next day, Jesus decided to leave for Galilee. Finding Philip, he said to him, follow me. John chapter 8, verse 12, when Jesus spoke again to the people, he said, I am the light of the world. Whoever follows me will never walk in darkness, but have the light of life. John chapter 10, verse 27, my sheep listen to my voice. I know them, and they follow me. John chapter 12, verse 26, whoever serves me must follow me, and where I am, my servant will also be. My Father will honor the one who serves me. John chapter 21, verse 19. Jesus said this to indicate the kind of death by which Peter would glorify God. Then he said to him, follow me. John chapter 21, verse 22. Jesus answered, if I want him to remain alive until I return, what is that to you? You must follow me. Well, we're here. Took us 8 weeks, and we are finally to the end of this Something's Missing sermon series. Some of you are probably indeed thinking, finally, I don't like 8-week sermon series. Some of you are probably thinking, good. Some of you are probably thinking, but we just got started. And I hope what's happened over the last 8 weeks is that you have taken some time to evaluate your faith life, to evaluate what's in your life, what is it that is creating that hole, what is missing. Now, as we're going through this, maybe as you've been filling out your fill-in-the-blanks, or that we got to those different words that we've talked about each week, maybe you start a few, and you say, you know what? These are the ones that I need to work on. And you know, I have a surprise for you. I still haven't told you what's missing. Now you're probably thinking, now wait a minute, I've been here for 8 weeks. You've given me a bulletin every week. I filled out every single blank. I sometimes went back and listened to the sermons again. I have been here for all of it. What do you mean? I've been here for 7 weeks now, and you still haven't told me what it is that's creating the hole in my life. What is it that's missing from my faith? Well, before you get too upset, let's just take a look at where we've been. Remember when we started this sermon series? We started this sermon series with the idea of trust. And you know what? That's where our faith begins. Faith begins with this idea of trust. And once you trust, then and only then, with trust in place, can you actually submit. I mean, if I don't trust you, it's obvious, right? I'm not going to submit to you because I don't know what you're going to do with what I give you, so I don't trust you, so I don't submit to you. And you know, the funny thing is once I submit, then and only then, can I obey? I mean, let's face it, if I don't trust you and I'm not willing to submit to you, then what you tell me means absolutely nothing to me. So there's no way on earth I'm going to obey you. I'm going to go do things the way that I want to do them. And here's the funny thing. Until you learn to obey, it's only then and only then that when you start to obey that you can actually understand the meaning of the word forgiveness. Because let's face it, as long as I'm still doing the things that I was doing and I'm still trying to hang on to my old life, I'm never going to understand forgiveness because I'm just going to keep doing those things and so I never actually feel forgiven. So I don't get it. It begins to break. And you know what? If I don't understand forgiveness and I've never understood how to accept and really receive forgiveness, then and only then can I then understand authenticity. Because that's kind of the whole purpose of the relationship. We have sin in our life. We have things that have caused us to fall short. It's created a gap between us and God. And until I actually learn how to accept that forgiveness, I never truly understand who God is. So I'm just staring at Jesus on the cross, and I never begin to become authentic in my relationship with him because I never embraced the entire purpose of the relationship. And the funny thing is if I'm not authentic, or if I can't become authentic, well, then and only then, you know what? I can't really see God. I don't get a vision for who God is because if I'm not actually authentic with God, then I never truly see God. I just kind of go through the motions of doing the things that I always do and being the person that I've always been, and the relationship never becomes authentic, so I never get to see who God is. And let's face it, if I never actually see who God is, then why on earth would I ever take action for him? I mean, it's only at the point that I actually see who God is and I actually understand who God is and I actually enter into the relationship with God that I actually feel like there's something God would have me to do and I feel inspired to get out of my nice comfy chair and get out and do something. And here's the real ironic thing. When I actually finally embrace action and I go out and I start doing things for God, you know what else begins to happen? My trust begins to deepen. Do you see what we've done? I haven't created a hole. In the first 7 sermons, what I've done is I've given you a definition of what is faith. As a matter of fact, so interwoven are these pieces of thing. It's like a sweater. You ever have a sweater and it gets one of those loose threads? And you're like, I can take care of this. So you just pull that one thread. And as you begin to pull that one thread, the hole gets a little bigger. It's like, well, I can still fix it, and you keep pulling thread. And first thing you know, it's all beginning to unravel because that one thread is connected to everything else in the sweater. Our faith works the same way. Our faith is absolutely, positively the same because you know what? That's how it's supposed to work. If you're missing any of these, then let me just go ahead and tell you. Your faith is going to begin to unravel. You just can't develop faith if you don't have all of these components. So I guess that brings us to the question. What am I missing? Well, today's video, let's look at those three people. And yes, where were they sitting? They were sitting on their own stools. I hope you didn't miss that. And as they were sitting there, you know what? They were discussing all of the things that they had done for Jesus. They were relying on what they did, not what they were doing. And as they were sitting there and they were making all these claims, the funny thing is they actually looked kind of comfortable to me. And as the session starts out innocently, it begins to spiral out of control as one claims to do more than the other, and they begin to focus on themselves, and so they now have no vision for Jesus. They get to the point that it began to look like a presidential debate as they begin attacking one another's relationship with Jesus instead of focusing on Jesus. And then along comes Jesus. And he kneels down with the simple bowl and a simple rag, and he washes his Lord's feet. And then he looks at them, and you know what? They don't seem to get the point. I mean, Jesus, what are you doing? Then amazingly, he stands up, and he hands the rag and the bowl, and he offers them to Laura. And he looks at her, and with those words, he says, "Do you love me?" Now, those are important words for us, because remember all the way back at the beginning of this whole process of this year of living in faith, we've been talking about what it means to have a love relationship with Jesus. So Jesus asking that question, "Do you love me?" is very important. But she doesn't answer. But he does continue his phrase, and he says, "You know what? Follow me. Follow me." And I got really excited when I was writing this sermon because I thought I had come up with a brand new word. Here is what's missing: followership. Now, I thought I had created a new word. I was thinking call Scrabble, you know, get it in the dictionary, call Webster. But you know what? This is already a word. You can go out in Merriam's dictionary. You can go out online and you can look this up. And here is what followership means. It means the capacity or willingness to follow a leader. Now, I want you to look at that very carefully because this is the important thing of what's missing. We're missing the willingness to follow. I mean, maybe I'm trusting, but I'm not sure what I'm trusting. Maybe I have a little vision, but it's not what Jesus' vision is. It's what I want. I'm lacking my ability to follow, so I want to look at those three things there that says you have to have if you're going to be a follower. You must have these. First thing you must have is you have to have some capacity. If you're going to follow Jesus, you're going to have to make some room in your life. If you're going to follow Jesus, there's probably going to be some things you have to move out of your life to make room for Jesus. If you're going to have the capacity to follow Jesus, then you get the idea you can't keep everything in there that was there. It's going to eventually have to move. You know, a few years ago, actually it's been 9 years ago, we moved from Charlottesville over to Stanton, well, to Waynesboro. And when we moved from a 2,700 square foot house to an 1,800 square foot house. And just so you know, the 2,700 square feet was full. You know what we rapidly learned? You can't fit 2,700 square feet of stuff into 1,800 square feet of space. So you know what we had to do? Had to give some away. We had some yard sales. Some of it went to the dump. We had to get down to 1,800 square feet if we were going to live within the capacity that we were going to put our lives into. And you know what? We need to understand that's what's sometimes missing from our faith. We are unwilling to create the capacity to have the relationship with Jesus. We want to have Jesus and keep the life crammed full of anything else. How many times have you ever said, "I'd love to do more for Jesus, but I just don't have," and use his time or money? You realize what the problem is, right? You've got a followership issue. You didn't think about creating capacity before you entered the relationship with Jesus. It also says that you have to have willingness, which is the quality or state of being prepared to do something or readiness. So you just can't come into this relationship and say, "Well, I've created the space, but now I'm just going to sit in my space and I'm going to do nothing." I have to be willing to do something with this, right? And more specifically, I have to be willing to do what he called me to do, what he said for me to do. I don't get to pick the menu of things that I'm going to do. I'm amazed sometimes that we think we come into this relationship with Jesus, and you know what? I want to tell Jesus how the relationship works. I don't know if you have been married, but if you have been married, you understand that's not the way it works. You don't come in and you just start barking orders. See, it just does not work that way. You have to have a willingness or a readiness. And you know what the third thing that you have to have if you're going to be a follower? You actually have to have a leader. Anybody ever played that game, Follow the Leader? You know why it's called Follow the Leader? Because there's somewhere out in front of you, and there's somewhere that you're going, and there's something that they're going to do, and you're going to go where they go and do what they do and walk the way that they walk at the speed that they walk. And the second you try to walk too fast, what happens? You get in front of the leader, and you're no longer following the leader. Who are you following? Yourself. Because you've got to keep the leader in front of you. You cannot be a follower and not have a leader. You have to have somebody that's in charge of your life. If you're in charge of your own life, it's just not going to work. So, do you have these three things? Have you created capacity in your life? Do you have a willingness to do something with that capacity? And more importantly, have you decided, you know what, Jesus is the leader. Me, I am just the follower. So that brings us to the story. Now, just so you know, one time blind, they stole the story. They didn't come up with that script. The script is actually found in John chapter 13. I'm going to read verses 2 through 5 to you. The evening meal was in progress, and the devil had already prompted Judas, the son of Simon Iscariot, to betray Jesus. Jesus knew that the Father had put all things under his power, and that he had come from God and was returning to God. So he got up from the meal, took out his outer clothing, and wrapped a towel around his waist. And after he poured water into a basin, he began to wash the feet of his disciples' feet, drying them with a towel that was wrapped around him. Now, there's also the idea of bragging. Remember our little people on the stool, they were bragging. Well, that happened that night too. Luke chapter 22, verse 24 tells us, a dispute arose among them to which of them was considered the greatest. Now, I want to pick up the story, and I don't want to just pick up the story. I want to jump back into the story. I want us to be in the story. Because I want you to imagine yourself that night, and it's the last night that Jesus is going to be here. It's that night in the upper room. It's where he instituted the Lord's Supper. All those things are there. You've had a great day and a great ministry life, and you know what? You've watched people get healed. You've healed people yourself. You've seen Jesus raise people from the dead. You've done all of these wonderful things, so now you're sitting around the table, and you know what? You're swapping war stories, telling people how great you are. And you know the funny thing is, Jesus was watching and listening to this. As he was sitting there at the table, and he knew what Judas was going to do, and he knew what was going on, and he knew the idea that the disciples didn't get it. They were all focused on themselves. Jesus was just sitting there, and he was just like, just listening, just watching, just paying a little attention. Here's the sad thing. He was not impressed. You ever tried to impress Jesus before? I have. I try this all the time. I try all the time to explain to Jesus what a great person I am. Look at all the things I have done. And Jesus is kind of like, but look at all the things you've not done because you're not doing what I asked you to do. And we had this conversation. My actions don't impress Jesus. I love what my college and career minister told me one time. Our best works of art are mere finger paintings on Jesus' refrigerator. The most beautiful thing that I can produce with my life, understand, that is not what impressed Jesus. That's kind of like the kids' drawing they bring home in kindergarten. They look at you like, what is it? It doesn't work that way. You don't impress God by putting out all of the things that you think you can do. So in the story, Jesus washed all their feet. Imagine what this probably looked like. They're around there and they're like going back and forth and they're debating and they're having this conversation and maybe they're even being critical of one another and they're saying, you know what, you don't get any of this. You just need to understand I'm the best at this. I did this. Hey, I did this. Don't you know I'm the one that brought the sack lunch to Jesus? All of these things. And Jesus just quietly gets up and he pours a bucket of water or a basin of water and he grabs a towel and he puts an apron around himself like a servant and he just begins going person to person and began washing their feet. I wonder how many people got washed before they started shutting their mouth and just paying attention to what Jesus was doing. Maybe it was at the first one when he knelt down and he took off their shoe and he began to wipe their feet and get the mud and all the stuff off of it. Maybe it took a few. I wonder if any of them asked a question. Jesus, what are you doing? But he began to go from disciple to disciple. He made sure he didn't leave out anybody. By the way, I personally would have wanted to be first in line because he only poured one bucket of water. So I kind of want mine to go first. That's just me. But he went from person to person, and he washed all of their feet. And here's the thing. When he got to the end, none of the disciples understood what he had done. They just sat there kind of, what am I supposed to do with that? I mean, is he trying to tell me that I should have been the one washing feet when we came in? Is he trying to, what's he trying to tell me with this particular story? And the good news is that, well, Jesus didn't leave it unexplained. As a matter of fact, Jesus gave us an explanation for what he did. When he had finished, so you get the idea that Jesus did this all in silence. Going from person to person, not saying a word. When he had finished washing their feet, he put on his clothes and returned to his place. Do you understand what I have done for you, he asked them. You call me teacher and Lord, and rightly so, for that is what I am. Now that your Lord and teacher have washed your feet, you also should wash one another's feet. I have set you an example that you should do this as I have done for you. Very truly I tell you, no servant is greater than his master, nor is a messenger greater than the one who sent him. Now that you know these things, you will be blessed if you do them. Now, this was not Jesus trying to do something nice for his friends. He didn't sniff the air and say, man, somebody stinks. I got to take care of this. I got to wash these feet, see if we can solve this. Jesus was not doing it. He was giving them a bona fide object lesson of what it means to actually be a follower. If you want to close the hole, you're going to have to get this followership idea down. And so let's take a look exactly what Jesus did. What was the object lesson that he was given? And you know, the first thing he identified the fact they considered him the leader. Isn't that what he said? You call me teacher, and you call me Lord. And rightly so, because I am. That is who I am. I am the leader. Therefore, by definition, if I am the leader, that makes everybody else at the table follower. That means if God is the leader, if Jesus is the leader, that means everybody else that's sitting here or in the sound of my voice, if he's the leader, then that means all of us are followers. And that means all of us probably have some dirty feet. Everybody has something in their life that makes them dirty. No exceptions to the rule. But notice, Jesus took them all. He didn't judge whose feet was the dirtiest and say, well, you can't come because yours are really bad. He took them all. And so he brings this idea, and then he wants them to understand this job, this dirty, stinky, smelly job of washing feet, it's not beneath your leader. Now that I, your Lord and teacher, have washed your feet, you also should wash one another's feet. I have set apart your example that you should do as I have done for you. I wonder if there was a scamper for the washcloth after that. Well, Jesus said we should wash each other's feet. I'll do it now because they're already clean. I don't have to deal with some of the dirt. Jesus already did the hard part. Didn't they just sit there and they looked at that water after their feet had been washed? And they're like, they looked at the dirt and what was maybe floating in it. And they began, you want me to do what? But you see, that's the idea. Jesus wanted to give them the idea that there was nothing that was off limits. And you know what? When he's all done with that, he kind of lowers the boom on them. And this is what he says. Very truly I tell you, no servant is greater than his master, nor is a messenger greater than the one who sent him. Now that you know these things, you will be blessed if you do them. He defines the relationship. You servant, I master. The second you become the master and you start telling Jesus how this is supposed to work, then you understand you are no longer following. And the moment you start following, you grab the hold of the thread in the sweater and you started pulling. And I guarantee you, the moment you stop following, you're going to watch the entire hole begin to form as the trust and the vision and the obedience and the forgiveness and all those things we associate with faith began to unravel because we pulled this one string. I decided I'm not going to be the follower. I want to be the master. I want to be in charge. Jesus says it's not going to work that way, folks. He then kind of gives us an indication of what our job is supposed to be, these do things. He says, you know what? I am the sender. You are the messenger. That means I'm not supposed to be making up the message. He gets the idea. Remember, they were living in an area where, in a time when there was no social media. There was no Facebook. There was no Twitter. There was no television. There was no radio. I guess they maybe had a newspaper. I don't know what they had, but you know how most of these things, how news got out, right? They were called proclamations. And so the king or the governor or the person in charge would write it out on paper, and they would give that one copy of that paper to a group of messengers. They would give the paper out, and the people would go out, and they would look at the paper, and they would simply do one thing. It's amazing. They would read the paper as loud as they could. So it's like, hear ye, hear all the people. This is how it's supposed to work. This is what your king says. This is what they didn't make the message up themselves. They simply were delivering the message that they were given. I think maybe sometimes we've done something wrong with this because we began making up the message ourselves. We've been deciding what we're supposed to tell people. We've been deciding what's good for people to hear. We've been deciding, well, I don't agree with that, so I don't really want to put that one out there, but I do agree with this one, so I think we'll really make this an emphasis. You get the idea. Jesus is telling them, I am the sender. I am handing you the message. Your jobs are to be the servants and take the message you have been given and go out and read it as loud as you can to everybody that's in there so that the message gets received by everybody. Man, that's following. So that means if I was one of those servants of a king and he handed me his piece of paper with a message, and I decided, you know what, I don't think this message is all that important. Maybe I'll get to this tomorrow. Tell you what, I'm going to go and I'm going to hang out with this group of people for a while, and then I'll do it after that. Or maybe, you know what, I'm kind of tired today, Lord. Tell you what, I'll go and read your message tomorrow. You know what probably happened to that servant? He wouldn't have been part of the kingdom anymore. Because the king had the idea that if you want to follow him, you've got to be a servant. You've got to be willing to do the things that he asked you to do. He simply says these words, follow me. All of those verses that I read you, that was Jesus. Over and over and over, more than he talked about sin, more than he talked about money, more than he talked about, he kept talking about the idea of if you want to be a disciple, then you have to follow me. And I understand why, because you know what? If I'm following Jesus, the rest of the circle takes care of itself. So as we begin to close this sermon series up, I really want you to ask yourself, am I, don't worry about your neighbor, don't worry about the person that's on your mind right now, don't worry about another family member, don't worry about your spouse, don't worry about your neighbors that live next door to you, don't worry about the people across the street, don't worry about anybody else. I just want you to ask this question for yourself. Am I a follower? Now, before you answer that question, let me add a couple other things for you to consider. When you say, yes, I am a follower, answer this question. Have you created the capacity for Jesus? Did you begin moving things out, making space for him because you were so desperately interested in following him that you know what? Stuff's got to go because Jesus is moving in. And when Jesus moves in, I want to make sure he has as much space as possible. Have you formed a willingness to follow? Is what it is that God has asked you to do, is that what you're doing, or have you made up your own list? Is what Jesus gave us the commands to do as a church, which, by the way, is pretty simple, it is to go into all the nations, baptizing them, making disciples in the name of the Father, Son, and Holy Ghost. It is the idea that we're supposed to go into Judea, Samaria, and all the way to the end of the earth. The idea is that we were supposed to be the messengers. Have we made up another alternative that we're supposed to be doing? Well, maybe we're just here to sing songs. No. Jesus didn't come to sing songs. He came to She can save the lost. That was his mission statement. Here's the other part. And you got to have this. Is he your leader? Is Jesus your leader? And you know what the truth is? If you can't answer that question, yes. If you can't say, yes, I've created capacity. You can't say, yes, I have a willingness. You can't say, yes, Jesus is my leader. You can keep working on this circle all you want. You can keep trying to have more trust. You can keep trying to have more submission. You can keep trying to be more obedient. You can keep trying to feel more forgiven. You can keep trying to be more authentic. You can keep trying to have more vision. You can even keep trying to take more action. But let me just tell you, it's an endless loop. It's never going to close the hole. You're just going to keep running around in a circle, and you're never going to get there. And the reason is because none of this closes the hole. These are the things that form the outside of the hole. Think about the church in Ephesus. This is where we started this year and where we've been there so many times. When Jesus looked at them, all the things that they were doing, all the stuff that they were good at, all the things that they focused on, all of those things, it just wasn't enough, because he looked at them and he said, that's all well and good, but you've missed something. You've lost your love for me. You've forgotten the key ingredient. Following. You've forgotten that Jesus gave us an example of the things that we were supposed to do. And if I am following, it's really simple. I do the things that he said. It's like the game of Simon Says. Either I'm doing it or I'm not. It's a yes or a no. It's not a I think so. See, this idea of followership. By the way, I actually did put water in this, and I have no intention of washing feet today because I know that would break so many rules right now. Although I did think about it. But I'm going to move that carefully. This idea of followership, I think it's lost on us. Here's the way I think it works for us. Seriously. Okay. I'll stop saying us. Here's the way it works for me. See, about 40-some years ago, gosh, that sounds so long, 4 decades, I was at camp. And I had one of those real moving experiences, and you know, they whipped us into a frenzy and they sang all these songs, and then they gave us a really great speech and a really great message. And they said, if you want to follow Jesus, come down the center aisle. And you know what? I walked down an aisle. And I gave my life to Christ. And then we went a few weeks down the road. It was about 6 weeks down the road. And they had to talk with my parents. And we had to get to the idea of what it means to be baptized. And we got to the idea. But, of course, my parents weren't coming to church. And so they had to come and get permission for us to be baptized. So they met with my parents. And they said, well, if you want to be a follower for Jesus, you got to be baptized. Okay. I hate water. I'm scared to death of water. But, sure, I can do that. Got in the tank. And they dunked me under. And they said, congratulations, you're a Christian. Now what? Oh, well, come to church, read your Bible, pray. If you get a chance, maybe talk to a few people about him. Be a good person and make sure you don't sin, because sin can really mess things up. And they gave me all these lists of rules. And you know what? For years and years and years and years and years, I tried. I did. And you know what? For years and years and years and years, I called other people out on the things that they were doing wrong. And just so you know, I'm a very good arguer, and we would have arguments and debates about what this jot or tittle in Bible meant, or what this, and I went through all of these moments in my life where I'm just kind of like, it's got to be this way or the highway, because you know what? My faith was built on the circle that I was just trying to do more. And it probably wasn't until I met a man, his name was Jerry Estes, and he kind of changed my perspective a little bit on how this works. Because he informed me the idea that people will never be able to see the passion I have for Jesus until they can see the compassion I have for others. The problem is I was so passionate about wanting to be the right kind of Christian, I forgot that I was supposed to become passionate for people and give them a fighting chance to have themselves led to Christ. See, somehow in the translation of what it means to be a Christian, somebody left this idea of following out. They left the following to the point of the baptismal pool. And when you get out to the baptismal pool, well, you're a follower. No. You know when you follow? The next morning after you get up, and God says, hey, let's do this today. And you're like, okay. I had something else planned, but okay. Or the next day after that, he said, I got something else for your life. Or the next day after that, he said, I want you to move over the mountain and preach at the church. God, that wasn't in the plan. Okay, I had a plan for my life. And it hasn't unfolded the way that I thought it was going to be because you had to learn how to become a follower. So that's my question for you today. That's the something missing. You want to close the hole in your faith and stop feeling empty, then become an honest to goodness follower. And you get the idea. That means Jesus says, I do. Jesus goes, I go. Jesus says, say this, I say that. Jesus says, wash dirty, smelly, stinky feet. I say, where's the water pail? Is that hard? No. And yes. Very hard to do, not so hard to understand. But this is where we're at in our relationship. If you want to really truly experience living faith, you have to close the hole. So that's my challenge for you as we head into the fourth quarter. Can you believe it's fourth quarter of 2020? Man, we're already to the last 3 months of the year. As we're closing out this year, that's going to kind of be a big resounding focus of becoming a follower, a true follower. And so that's what we're going to help you understand over the next two sermon series, that what it really means to have a rock solid foundation to your faith that I can build on smartly and become a true follower of Christ.